at 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 5-9 of The Fan. I just want everyone who listens to this show to know that Ailish actually tells me, like, really interesting, fun topics outside of the show. And then she goes, no, I don't like to talk about my personal life. I don't like to talk about this. I don't like to talk about that. And it's just, I just want you all to know that she really does hold back, okay? So text and tweet and tell Ailish to stop, like, tightening the purse strings
there
around every little thing.
There was one story that I didn't want to tell on air. And
that's not true. That's not true.
Okay.
What did we talk about last time we went for beers?
Yeah. Well.
Oh, yeah. So
there's boundaries, okay?
No, that's the thing. You got. Hey, Ben Nicholson Smith will know this better than anybody because our next guest has been doing his podcast now for 8 years. Eight.
Jeez.
You know how awesome that is? 8 years of At The Letters, and it's better than ever, baby. It's better than ever. You subscribe, you review, you do all those five things. Sports MLB editors, and again, 8 years on the pod. Ben Nicholson Smith, you know, you can't hold things back on the pod. Like, you got a thing, you got to let it rip. You got to let it fly.
Well, you do have to let your baseball takes rip, and there's no doubt that I'm pretty unfiltered with baseball. But I agree with Ailish that there are some things that I would just not really get into far as beyond the sporting world. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that Ailish is a bit of a coward, and the things that we're talking about here are just like fun little things, you know, and it's fine, but it's fine. It's
maybe
fine,
one
Ailish.
Day, JD.
You know, stay in your coward cave and just hide out there and hope that no one ever comes and tries to visit. Okay, so I want to get into some of the positive stuff of yesterday, but Benny, how did it come to this with the pitching staff? Like, I hate when we're in June, and I guess we can say it's July, and I'm watching a game where Kevin Gausman goes deep, and I just, when you have the take of, God, the team needed this, when we're talking about length from a starter, and it's like, no team literally needs it more than the Jays right now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've had so many issues lately trying to get through that rotation and find some consistency, so they definitely do have a lot of questions when it comes to that starting five and Berríos lately, and obviously Kikuchi is the number one. So it's a challenge. I do think that they have enough arms in the organization at Triple A or in the bullpen where they can get through the nine innings and they can cover those innings, but it's just a question of how good those innings are. And to me, the 7-2 games are the easy ones, and you need a bunch of those, and that's great. But of course, the more challenging ones are, you know, what happens when it's 4-2 tonight and they need to get through three innings of high leverage. And then that's where you really do have to find some help on the trade market.
Well, and that's what I said off the top of the show is like, hey, I don't mind the Sergio Romo signing because it's nothing, right? It's a guy that you can DFA. He's getting no money. You're asking this guy to pitch never, like, in zero leverage always. Like, we saw that Anderson guy I'd never heard of before yesterday. He's like, oh, Anderson, okay, whatever. He's in mop-up duty. And that's what I expect from Romo as a guy that they're using to patch up some garbage time innings, like some out-of-reach innings. Like, that's what he's supposed to be in. Because he's given up a million home runs, and, like, I looked at every one of the numbers trying to be like, oh, is there any reason for optimism? It's like, no, there's no reason for optimism with this guy. Like, he's 39 years old. He's washed up. It's fine. But I guess he's better than Anderson. So if you can do that, you take the incremental improvement. But you're right. Like, my level of confidence in this team, if they're in tight ball games right now, is extremely low. Like, I trust Romano. I kind of trust Jimmy Garcia, even though it's been a little more up and down than you'd like to be this year. Now, Meza hasn't been the same guy since the injury. Like, you're also, this is actually where I want to go with this. They're facing this Red Sox team, and like, what has been one of the prevailing Red Sox storylines this year is that they desperately need a closer, right? Like, they brought in Robles, and he wasn't working out, and they've tried a bunch of different guys in, like, closer-by-committee roles, and they've blown a lot of saves. It feels like Toronto's in a trade market right now, like, for the next month, where it's going to be hyper-competitive with a lot of different teams, and I wonder if you've heard anything about, like, whether or not This is going to continue to be a delayed market, that the Jays aren't going to have the same opportunity as they did last year, because there are so many teams that are trying to contend for those spots that need arms like a little bit more desperately than in some years past.
Yeah, from what I hear, it is a pretty slow developing market so far, and that's not great for the Jays. I mean, it would be better for them if there was a bit more certainty there, if there was a bit more momentum there. But as far as I can tell, there are so many teams that are kind of on the edges of things, so that could lead to a bit more inventory of decent relievers. Even a team like the Pirates, right? And like David Bednar, of course, is the one of the big names that people look at because he's having a great season for them. But the Pirates are just now having a bit of a resurgence. O'Neill Cruz is up with them. They're playing a little bit better. So are you going to make that move in June if you're the Pirates? Or do you wait it out and see if the offers improve and try to play these teams against each other for another month and then maybe deal them on August 2nd or maybe not? Like, I think that for a lot of reasons, the best arms usually do move right at the deadline. And that's starting pitchers, that's relievers. Sure, you can trade for Trevor Richards in June, but if you're looking for the high impact, you know, sometimes those names only reveal themselves on like July 28th that they're actually out there. And then sometimes it just takes time because the teams want to really be like this. No seller is going to jump unless they are getting a tremendous offer. And I just don't see the Jays bowling over some team right now with Aurelvis Martinez and Jordan Groshans for a relief.
No. I think that the big advantage too, some of these sellers have right now is that, like, if you're negotiating with the Jays, one is that they don't need the Trevor Richard types. And I know actually Trevor Richards can strike people out, or that he could last year, and that was actually one of the good things about the guy. But is that they don't need any more soft-tossing, you know, contact pitchers. Like, it's the dead last thing the team needs. Like, they need high-end swing and miss. And if you're another organization that's taking phone calls from them, you're like, we know you need to add this. Like we know there's not a point where you're going to – maybe you can get it somewhere else – but we know you have to get it. Like, this isn't a maybe or you'd like to add. This isn't a luxury add, because I think sometimes teams do that at the deadline, and it's why bullpen arms usually do go at such a premium, is that for everybody it's like the one place in a luxury add that you can throw an addition to. But the Blue Jays are so just completely bereft of talent there that everybody who picks up the phone with them is like, no. Like, we know. We absolutely know what you need, yeah. And there's no reason why we're going to budge, because you're going to need it today, you're going to need it tomorrow, you're going to need it a month from now. So, yeah, it's all going to remain the same. So that brings me to the next thing, which is like, at what point do you just say you also need to add a starter? Or do you really think that this organization is comfortable looking at Thomas Hatch? Because I just can't imagine that Kikuchi's span here is going to be all that much longer if it continues to be this bad. Because, like, again, they can't just tax the bullpen this way when there's nobody in that bullpen. They can't be asking for seven innings routinely.
Yeah, for sure. And they both of those aspects, of course, connect, because if you do get a good starter, then does that move Stripling into a bullpen role? Does that help you out a little bit in the later innings? Because Stripling could be a super useful reliever, even, you know, who knows how the season unfolds. But in the playoffs, is that the role that he's going to be in? So a starter is something the Jays are looking at and will continue to look at. But I think your point on relief is great, because, you know, not only is this something that everyone knows the Blue Jays need, but that high octane reliever is something that the other playoff teams want too and need too. So the Red Sox want that. Everyone wants that when they're trying to bolster their bullpen. So then you're never going to give that up easily. And it's not like you're looking for, oh, we just need a lefty specialist. Or, you know, when the Jays, if the time comes that the Jays need to acquire a lefty bat for the bench, they'll be able to do that. And I don't think it's going to cost them a ton, because there's actually, like, there's a fair amount of guys out there who can fill that role if, you know, whatever it is, Bradley Zimmer gets hurt or Tapia regresses, and they need to do that. They'll have some choices. But high-octane relievers, it's going to cost a lot.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking at I wonder how flexible a team like Baltimore is going to be. I wonder how flexible a team like Detroit is going to be. Like, those two teams both have, like, that stuff in their bullpen right now. But, yeah, you look at a lot of the other teams, and even, actually, surprisingly, like, I'm just looking at Fangraphs right now over the last month. Baltimore's K per nine has, like, really dropped off in their bullpen, which I don't really – I'm like, oh, that's actually a pretty surprising stat to me, because we've seen some of their just like absolute lightning bolt dudes at the back end of that bullpen. But yeah, like if you just look at the list of sellers, and we're looking at like their potential sellers and K per nine rates out of their bullpen, it's like it's not going to make Blue Jays fans very happy. It's like it's a lot of good teams that are at the very top of that list. It's not like a bunch of junky teams that are like, oh, we have a bunch of strikeout guys. It's like, no, it's like the Braves and the Mets and the Dodgers and Miami. And yeah, it's just a lot of really good teams. I am curious to see how that market shapes up. And I keep coming back to the feeling of, okay, when are you desperate? Because you're right. Like, you don't want to make it a horrific trade. And I don't think that this front office wants to do that. I don't think that you're bang on where you're saying, like, they're not going to give up an Aralvis Martinez or a Jordan Groshans to get a relief pitcher. The position's too volatile. It's way too risky. But I do kind of I keep coming to, what is the level of desperation for a team that really does need to be in the playoffs this year? Like, it's a competitive field. It's a tough field. I wonder if they, like, slip out of the postseason, like, if they fall a couple of games out of this, like, they drop two of these next games to Boston, whether or not that changes things. Like, when do you think that you're actually going to see that maybe desperation level tick up a little bit with this group, or how much they actually feel it internally?
Great questions. I think this is a year that you have to make the playoffs. Like, you can't miss out. This is the fourth season of Vlad and Bo, and they've had one little playoff series in Tampa in the pandemic year, which kind of, I don't know if we're counting that. Like, they need to be in the playoffs. This is an incredible core. They have a ton of talent. Offensively, they're one of the best teams in baseball, as we saw again last night. And they've got a couple aces to lead the staff. So they need to augment it with the support for the rotation and some high octane bullpen arms, and you're good to go. That's a scary playoff team, but you got to get there first. So, you know, the urgency, when does that come? What does that look like? It's a long season. Like, if they lose the next two to the Red Sox, like, I don't think that's panic time. I think that that's part of a baseball season. At the same time, you know, urgency, like, I do wonder what does that look like? I mean, certainly, you're moving on from guys if they're not performing. You could consider some bigger picture shakeups. I mean, if you're the Blue Jays and you're kind of 10 to 11 games over the 500 mark at the end of July, do you start thinking about bigger packages involving a Danny Jansen, a Teoscar Hernandez? I mean, are these things that you consider as you look to, you know, potentially shake things up? And we're not there right now, but, you know, you have to be open-minded if you're the Jays, because this year is incredibly important.
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about this stuff. And, like, I know the Jays won yesterday. And so there's probably some people listening to this to me right now and going, like, JD, they just had this really awesome win. And Vladdy hit a bomb. And Springer hit a bomb. And Gausman went deep. It's just that, again, I had two prevailing feelings from that baseball game yesterday. And one was, oh, my God, they needed that from Gausman. And the other was, oh, my God, they just needed that from, like, a record standpoint. They needed to get off to a good start to the series against Boston and take advantage of, like, I already forget the guy's name, Seaborn? Like, was that it? Like, the pitcher for the Red Sox?
Yeah.
Where I go, like, yes, yeah. I'm like, they gotta tattoo this kid. Like, they need to chase him, because the Red Sox in their last 10 are 8-2, and the Blue Jays are 4-6, and it's been like a month now of back to kind of 500-ish baseball for the Jays. And yeah, when they look good, when the bats are clicking, and Gausman or Manoah is steamrolling guys, and I should kind of throw Ross Stripling into that in terms of, like, when Ross is going well and the Jays are hitting, it all looks great. But it's like these tight games that they were winning at the beginning of the season, by the way, where they had this impeccable record in. I just don't feel very good about it, and I'm looking at the trajectory of some of these other teams, and it's like, boy, these next two Boston games, and then the next couple of Rays games, the next Rays series, I just think that you could be coming out of that with a very, very different tone if you're a Blue Jays fan, if you very conceivably come out of this as the number four team in the division.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the way to avoid that is just to continue mashing, and yeah. You know, they're mostly healthy as a lineup right now. And I think if we see, what was it, 3 home runs yesterday, Chapman,
yep.
Vladdy, I might be missing one, Springer homered. If you keep hitting 3-4 home runs a game, put up 7 every night, like, you're going to just create so much breathing room. You're going to just annihilate the other pitchers. You're going to be able to withstand a couple of runs in the late innings like they allowed from Anderson last night. That's fine if you're scoring that many runs. And I know it's a big ask, but that's supposed to be what this team is. You know, they are supposed to be a team that outscores everyone. And this is the perfect time to tap into that. They're at home. Yeah. it's the middle of summer, the ball's flying again, like, let's go. This is the time for some 6 and 8 and 10 run games. And that's, you know, that's the path to going 5-3 on this stretch or 6-2 on this stretch.
Yeah, it's absolutely the path. But I, like, this is something I always evaluate with all sports is like, how many different ways can you win, right? And I go, the team that has the most flexibility in terms of styles that you can win a fight is the team that I like the most. And right now with the Jays, it kind of just feels like, boy, you really need to win the Manoah and Gausman starts. Like, those just become just hyper-important for this group right now. And they have to mash to win. Like, that's just how I feel about them. I'm going, yeah, that feels like a recipe for what we've seen so far, which is hot streaks where you go, wow, this is an this lineup has no let-up, and the team gets hot, and they win some games. But it's when we go, well, why do the Blue Jays have dips? And you go, well, that's why. Like, because there's so much volatility to that playing style. But you're right. At least everybody's hitting. I'm going to focus only on one guy, though, that is hitting here right now. And it's not Alejandro Kirk, because, again, he's the greatest player who ever lived. He's the Babe Ruth reincarnate. It's incredible watching this guy hit. I love watching his approach. I love watching every little piece of it. But it's the Kevin Biggio thing, because he's actually hitting pitches that he wasn't hitting before. And I'm like the most reluctant guy to believe in this because, you know, and Ennis is always brings this up to me whenever we talk about him, but he's a guy who has always gotten on base, right? Like, no matter what, he'll draw a walk. But the MO kind of became, well, if you throw heat and you throw it over the plate, he's not going to be able to catch up with it. And all of a sudden, he sort of seems to be doing that a little bit more. Are you actually starting to buy this a bit, or is this someone that I can't remember who it was, but about a week ago we had someone on that was just saying the ideal situation here is playing out, which is he's getting kind of a little sneaky hot for a couple of weeks before a trade deadline, and he's actually a piece that's the change of scenery candidate. Like, what do you think the ultimate Kevin Biggio outcome is here?
I think the best case scenario for the Jays with their bench is the guys keep hitting. Biggio, Tapia, you know, of course, if we're counting Moreno on the bench, which I guess for now he is.
Have to.
Zimmer's never really hit, so let's not get our hopes up there. But let's say for the other three, you want those guys to. And Zimmer's fine as a defensive guy because
no, he's, you know, a ninth inning center fielder closer. That's his role on the team, and steal bases. Those are his roles.
Yeah, and that's okay.
Yeah, fine.
On a 26-man roster. So with the other ones, you want them, best case, to continue hitting, and then that eases the pressure on the front office. They don't have to go out and augment. Because, of course, if those guys slump, all of a sudden you're talking about augmenting, and you're talking about finding reinforcements there. So, yeah, I think they can play their way into continued playing time, and that includes Biggio, and he's doing a really good job. I mean, we've seen when he first came up, all of the things that he was able to do with the sneaky power, the absolutely incredible plate discipline, the versatility. He's looked more comfortable defensively this year because he's not being shoehorned into the third base, a position where he never seemed fully comfortable. So he's doing a lot of things nicely for this ball club. And, you know, if they put him in situations where he can make an impact, you know, which is to say probably against a lot of right-handed pitching, probably don't want him facing too many 99s, but, you know, you find the right matchup for him. Like, that's good. He can be useful, and they don't need their bench players to be more than useful when they're starting 8 or 9 is, you know, one of the best in baseball.
Yeah, no, I'm actually kind of surprised. I shouldn't say surprised, but yeah, no, surprise is fine. But I was not really in on Tapia. I went, okay, if you're adding lefty bats, I'd like one that hits more, and you can steal bases, sure, but you have to be able to get on base in order to do that. And then the fielding is kind of rough at times, but lately it's just been better, and maybe I just like bat to ball a little bit more and this version of baseball, but Tappy's been better to me. The Biggio thing just, it actually does change the equation, because I thought the bench was a kind of an issue, and the depth was a bit of an issue earlier on when guys weren't hitting, and now you look at it and go, yeah, if Moreno's a guy and Jansen comes back and Biggio hits this way, I mean, at least when we're talking about like bullpen and having to paper over some problems, maybe if these guys continue to go this way, you don't need to add depth in that area. Bradley Zimmer, by the way, OPS plus of 23. It's a 23. Yeah. That's not a good number. So, yeah, he's a defensive closer, and that is fine. Ben Nicholson-Smith, I don't think we will be revisiting Arden's article about Bradley Zimmer putting all the pieces together, or the hope for him to put the pieces together. I think that one will just that one's going to go in the no pile. But either way, this was fun, and say hi to your co-host for me. Again, man, congrats. It's been 8 years. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm not sure why it's coming up now, but that's great. And it's it's fun to always fun to record. And I just to one other thing on one of the points you were making, because I totally agree on the ways to win, which is, you know, I think at this time of year, all you have to do is win, and it doesn't matter how. And if it's because an umpire gives you a call or because fan interference, like whatever, just take the wins. And then once you get to October, that's when you want to have the perfect roster. And so I almost wonder, like with the Yankees right now, they are perfect. Like they are, this is ideal, but I wonder if they're peaking too early. And so it's about having that perfect roster in October.
Buddy, I love that take because it gives me hope, because right now I actually was going the other way when I was watching yesterday, like they came back again. And I thought maybe the Jays don't even need to load up this year or do anything this year, because it's just like, yeah, just whatever. We'll wait until the Yankees aren't the greatest team that ever fielded a group. Like just
that could be too much.
That they're too good. I know you can't do that in baseball, and it's you get into a series and pitching, and they would have their three guys. But yeah, oh my God, that Yankees team is unbelievable. Again, the At the Letters podcast, also unbelievable. Go subscribe to it and enjoy the rest of season 8. I'll talk to you later, Benny.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
See you, pal. That's Ben Nicholson-Smith, editor for all of Major League Baseball on our site. And yes, excellent host of the At the Letters podcast. And that insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Again, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Whew, they're desperate to make the playoffs. And I don't know if this is a weird thing to say or if this is even a take that makes sense, but I think that the rest, like a lot of Blue Jays fans, didn't really realize how tight the division was. Like the division just sort of creeped up and caught up to everybody. And people were like, oh yeah, it's the Yankees and then it's us.
The Red Sox went like 19-4 in June. So like, yeah, if you just blinked, they were outrageous.
I just don't think that there was like urgency amongst the fan base, that everyone was kind of chill and going like, yeah, you know, I wish this team was having some things that are better, but ultimately you can't really complain. It just, yeah, those things feel like they're going to change a little bit. I think that the conversations that I'm referencing, the Jamie Campbell thing again. Jamie Campbell talking on Tim and Friends a couple of weeks ago or a week ago after the Yankee series, saying the tenor of the fan base changed after the Yankee series because the expectation changed and you saw what they looked like against the World Series favorite. And now I think it's going to change even more depending on what ends up happening over the course of these next two series. And so, yeah, you hope that they keep mashing, because that really does feel like the only path to victory right now, and you certainly don't want to put any more strain or stress on what seems to be a bit of an overlooked group. Again, that insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Let's make some picks. It's time for the Wake and Rake. We'll be joined by Vacation Blake next on the Fan Morning Show with JD and Ailish, Sports at 5-9 of the Fan.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 of the Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With JD, Blake, and Ailish. The Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. We had Cabby join us yesterday. Classic miss bet. But between that, Cuthbert and I hit ours. So you always just erase the guest, right? They don't count in our spreadsheets. And we have Blake Burvey back with us today. How was your trip, Blake?
It was lovely. It was betting free, though. I forget that now that it's legal here. All the stuff's geo-blocked, mm-hmm. So you can't use it when you're in the U.S. I'm at a White Sox game, and I'm like, oh, this game is like White Sox-Orioles. This is the most meaningless game. Why don't I fire up some nonsense to bet? And, geo-blocked. Oops.
Honestly, Blake, I'm really disappointed in you for two reasons. One is that the geo-blocking on apps is like it's been before it was even legal here. But number two is that any true degen knows is that you have to have your like bookie friend, aka your friend who you feel comfortable giving your betting account password to, that places the bets for you. And that I didn't receive this call, that you went to a White Sox game with no action on it, a live sporting event in a different country with no action on it, like, and no phone call to me. I think we gotta like suspend your D-Gen card, because you're with me. You're sneaky D-Gen. I'm out there with my degenerate. You know, Ailish is out there. She had the thick king parlay the other day. She's cooking up like random parlays, you know, like, and you're kind of the one where people go, no, Blake's a professional, but people don't know. Blake texts me all the time. He's betting on everything. He's just D-Gen club all the way. But to not do this, you're suspended. You're pending further investigation. You're suspended.
Two minor defenses of myself. I think you're mostly right, but yeah. One, based on the text I received from you, that's, of course,
by the way,
weekend,
bad start to your defense. I think you're mostly right is not the way that I would ever open a defense trial.
Yeah. One, based on the text you sent me over the course of the weekend, I don't think you were a reliable intermediary by the time late Saturday afternoon rolled around.
Oh, yeah. I was gone.
Two, if it was something bigger, like had I made it to that UFC event or something like that, then I would have done that for sure. But like the White Sox game was delayed an hour and a half. I wasn't even sure if I was going to get it in. It just didn't seem worth it.
I mean, it's always worth it to me. You know, yeah. Like I've never, I just think about this. I'm trying to think of the last time I went to a sporting event without having action on it. And like, I think I was a child. I think I was a wee little baby the last time that happened. Like, for me,
and you're still trying to bet your parents and your brother peanuts?
Just something.
Like, oh, I'll bet you the last of this bag of peanuts.
Anything.
There's a home run here.
Just a little something, you know? Like, just a little tiny little taste. A little tiny taste. bit of a thing. Before we jump into... I just want to ask you this BS hypothetical, because today is the only day that we could do it, because it's already dead. But I saw friend of the show, Sean Woodley. He posed a question on Twitter the other day of, I think it was yesterday, would you trade Scottie Barnes for Kevin Durant? And we just went through this 24-hour news cycle of will he, won't he with Kyrie. And then there was this Woj bomb of KD doesn't have a say in this, really. Like, if they want to trade him, they'll trade him.
He doesn't have a no-trade clause.
I know. And like, granted, it's a guy of Kevin Durant's stature. No organization is going to trade for him if he's going to not really show up to where you are, which is, like, technically...
I don't know. Kawhi didn't want to go to Toronto?
Yeah, that's... Dude, never forget that first... Kawhi picture where he was in Toronto and he looked like a hostage.
Yeah.
He's just, and people went like, see, he's here. You guys said he'd never even come here. Like, that was a win
for
Toronto.
He's meeting the bare minimum of his contractual requirements so he can get his $35 million.
Even if he does a bad job, he gets his quote. Like, that's the thing. Anyway, that was still, I love, someday someone's going to do like a YouTube video, like a breakdown of Kawhi. Tenure in Toronto, like, and I'm so here for the video breakdown of the video memory. Probably not enough for a book, maybe, but probably not. And I thought that it was a good question, because I think that every team would have to evaluate, hey, if Kevin Durant is available, what would we be willing to trade to get KD? And there's probably a world where you could get Durant for like a different trade package, maybe. Like, I don't even know, but that involves like Siakam and OG, right? But if you do that, then you can't win a championship. Like, there's no, oh, now you just have Kevin Durant and you don't have any depth. This is already a Raptors team that doesn't have any depth. This is just a hypothetical. I just think it's fun. But it's like, Kevin Durant's in year 16. He's come off of like multiple lower body injuries. But then you think about, you'd have him under contract for 4 years, and this is assuming that he'd be at least down to play it out. And you'd have Kevin Durant with Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, and I know that the contracts don't make sense. Like, just playing out the hypothetical, you get to keep, like, a Fred, Siakam, and OG core. Let's say Gary Trent goes the other way for a contract, and you lose Trent, and maybe you add a Patty Mills in the trade just for fun. Would you do it? Would you trade Barnes for 4 years of KD?
I personally, yes, probably.
I would do it too.
I would do it too. I don't think the Raptors would do it. But like,
I don't want that toxicity around here.
Oh,
the Kawhi. I don't think KD's
I'm all about the
toxic
vibes.
One. KD's not the toxic one. Katie's just the guy who keeps pairing up with toxic people.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe it's
his own toxic trait. No. I think that's its own form of toxic trait where you will continue to put up with the people who are not good to you. But yeah, I think that the Raptors would have to do it. Because it's like, if you had Kevin Durant and you had those pieces around him, like, you know what's frustrating about the Raptors right now? And I wanted to, like, we'll talk about this throughout the offseason and as things kind of heat up, but it's how I really felt at the draft. And I was texting with you a little bit during the draft of, like, I didn't really want the Raptors to trade OG Anunoby for the 7th pick. Like, I didn't like that idea. I didn't love who was at 7.
No, it had to be a bigger package.
Exactly. But, you know, the more I was kind of reading around, you know, other non-Toronto viewpoints on the OG thing, and I think it was fair to do the look at OG and say, well, this is a guy who's not that far away from a contract extension. He's someone who hasn't stayed fully healthy. He's someone who might not be the most thrilled with his current situation, even if he's not, like, upset with his situation. Maybe you guys are doing the same thing you did with the Norm Powell trade, which is, like, you're concocting a trade proposal that isn't actually going to be there, which is like the 7 Josh Hart plus another asset. Like that seemed actually overly ambitious from what I saw from the rest of NBA Twitter. But the thing with the Raptors right now is that it feels like they are very much like the team that got Kawhi, where there's like an infrastructure that if it was around another superstar player could absolutely win. Like if you were in a big game with Fred and Siakam and OG and Kevin Durant, I think that puts you on the same level, if not higher, than the Celtics team that just went to a finals. And I know how it would feel with that group against that last Warriors team, which is pretty damn good. Like, the NBA is pretty wide open now. The biggest risk to me would be, like, the health thing with KD, which is if he does go down with one more lower body injury, you're stuck with that contract on the books for 3 seasons. You can't move it.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And that's, you know, the Kawhi thing was, the risk was it's only 1 year. And the risk with that one is, well, it's lots of years. I don't know. I think, like, the Kawhi memory is fresh in my mind of what it feels like and how it works when you have the best player in a series.
Yep.
And you have the best player on the floor at all times. And Kevin Durant is usually going to be that. Like, I think other than Giannis, maybe Embiid, but they're not really head-to-head in the same way. He's probably still that. Like, he's still the most multi-dimensional scorer in the league. So
did this last run against the Celtics change your opinion on that at all, though? Like, the way that they bottled him up? Because I know that Celtics team was incredible, but you saw what Steph did against them, and it's a totally different type of scorer.
And Jimmy Butler.
But that's what I mean, is, like, both those guys got theirs, and KD got completely swallowed up by them. I needed to ask you that secondary part of it, because it's like, if you're the Raptors, so much of that question would come down to, hey, what was that we just saw against the Celtics? Because if that ever happens again, we're screwed.
Yeah, I think what you'd probably have to look at pretty deeply is what else was going on around him on that Brooklyn team. Like Kyrie was okay in that series and had some moments, but
he,
like,
had one moment in game one and then stunk.
They were out of guys at that point too. Like, Dragic and Drummond were playing big roles in that series.
Yeah.
And the ghost of Blake Griffin was still playing. Like, that's not even our guy Big Kess played a little bit. Like,
I know
that. And I know the Raptors aren't a depth team, but I think you trust them a little more to, and, like, that's not an indictment of the net. Like, they had a bunch of injuries. Like, Joe Harris was a huge part of what they were supposed to do. They never got Ben Simmons back, all that stuff. But I think you'd have to look at that and how much that environment contributed to, like, if KD doesn't have someone to pass out of those traps to that can do anything, that kind of makes the situation worse. But yeah, you'd have to dig in on it more.
Yeah, I think that you have to do it. I think that it is a little bit of, like, Toronto protectionism if it was
I don't know if it's protectionism or it's 3 to 4 years of a guy at the very end of his competitive window that you're basically, you have to win now versus potentially, like, 15 years of a guy. It's like, do you want your window to be X amount open for 3 times longer or X plus one open for only 3 years, though?
But, like, this is a question
kind of
for Ailish.
Philosophical.
This is a question for Ailish now, who has usurped you as show math guy. Earlier in the show today, she got really deep into poker hands and math, and to the point where
let me send you a thread. You're gonna love it.
Yeah, she's gonna, and you actually will love it. You actually will love it.
He probably already read it. He probably studies it every night.
I think that the odds that Scotty Barnes opens a window for you that would be like, you know, the potential of the next 3 years with Kevin Durant and those surrounding pieces is way less likely than Kevin Durant staying healthy and being who he would be for the next 3 years. And again, like I would just say to Toronto fans, like I know that keeping the young player seems like the thing now because that's where we're at. But yes, the Kawhi trade did happen here. And yes, remembering that feeling of, oh my God, we're in a series and that guy is taking over this game. And the way that all the pieces kind of start to fit differently around that group, I think is really interesting. And again, it gets to a core potential philosophical question that the Raptors are going to have to ask. It'll never really involve Scotty Barnes because he's never getting traded. But when are they going to kind of decide on which one of the windows they're going to try to capitalize on? Because contracts are coming up. Guys are going to have to get paid. They're already capped out and they're not deep. So where do these things go over the next couple of years? Anyway, just some fun.
It can't possibly happen. So it's just a fun thought experiment. Like,
yeah,
you'd have to have to make the salaries work. You'd also have to have OG and Gary Trent in there.
Yeah, yeah. That's like, of course. It's literally like something.
But it is a fun thought experiment. The longer term window versus a more open, shorter term window with a lot more risk.
Here's the thing, too, is that it also makes you have to realize, okay, well, how good would the player have to be to join that group where you would trade Scotty Barnes right now and try to capitalize on the next 2 years of Fred, OG, and Siakam as supporting pieces to what could be a championship-level player? Like, I wouldn't trade Scotty Barnes for Jimmy Butler, but I did think, like, could the Raptors win a championship if you replaced Jimmy Butler with Scotty Barnes tomorrow in this landscape of the NBA? Like, I don't know. I just don't think that it's weird. They're just a hard team to evaluate in terms of kind of where they could be on the line, because I watch that Boston team and I go, there's a roadmap for Toronto getting on closest to that level with a trade like that. Anyway, let's move on. The Blue Jays tonight in action. It's Stripling night. It's Waka night.
It's Looney Dog night.
Yes. Are you going, Ailish?
No, but I might now.
Well, I was just going to say that, listen, this, what's the
over-under? Well, yesterday I gave Cabby some flack because they stole the Looney Dogs content from me.
I'm glad you called him out on that. What did he say?
He tried to pretend that he's like, I never even thought about that. I was like, you know how many people messaged me about you stealing my content? He's like, I didn't know you had the corner on Looney Dogs content. I'm like, well, kind of. Don't come for my throne.
Yeah.
And then he challenged me to a Looney Dog contest because the guy that went got 9. And I said, no, never mind. I'm not going.
Yeah. That's a tough one. What did you hit? 5, 6?
5.
Yeah. Yeah. A tough one.
He was trying to do one every inning anyway. So there's no way for me.
Blue Jays are favored tonight with Strip on the mound. Red Sox, kind of is this a surprising number to you guys, considering that, like, I know Stripling's been great, but this is a starter for the Red Sox who's got an ERA of, I think, like 230. And, yeah, this is a bullpen that has not been very great for the Toronto Blue Jays. And, yeah, just like coming off of a loss, there's a lot of different factors here. Like, the Red Sox are 8-2 in their last 10, red hot baseball team. Are you surprised at all by the line?
I certainly was this morning. I think that the Red Sox are going to win this game, unfortunately. I don't want to say that with too much confidence, but I think, look at the pitching matchup. I like Stripling. We've been all over Stripling, but if he doesn't get more than 6 innings in there, what's the bullpen confidence? I was surprised to see the line, to say the least.
Wow. The lack of faith in Sean Anderson. Unbelievable. Yeah. I was a little surprised. And one thing, honestly, that I got to find a way to quantify this and run the numbers on it, but I am fairly certain at this point, since the legalization of sports betting in Ontario, Toronto teams are just overvalued on the market. And I don't know if that's the lines being set in a way expecting heavier action on Toronto, but we talk about this with football a lot, right? Like, which teams are the public teams being the
Patriots?
Well,
the Maple Leafs are second favorite odds to win the Stanley Cup. So, yes, this is a real thing.
Yeah, like the Patriots or the Cowboys sometimes, depending on the matchup. And if it's a primetime game, that could be worth like a point and a half. I got to find a way to quantify this, but the Jays have pretty consistently been overvalued of late. So I was a little surprised at the line, but not surprised in the context of like what we've seen the last little while. I will say Waka is maybe the biggest screaming for regression pitcher in baseball so far. Like, he has a 2.34 ERA. and all the component metrics are like four and a half ERA. He just does not miss bats. Mm-hmm. And that's a really hard thing to do in the AL East, especially. It's, you know, maybe this isn't the night it catches up with him, but he's got like a swinging strike rate below 9%. And he strikes out like nobody. He strikes out six and a half guys per nine. Mm. In that division with those ballparks, it's just too much room for contact. It's too much room for hard contact when you don't have elite stuff. So I don't know if it's tonight, but it's coming for Waka at some point this year.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I think that you can make a case that the Blue Jays could be favored in this ball game. I just think that the value of minus 143 on them tonight is a tough sell for me.
Yes.
I'm not as far as Ailish where I think the Jays are going to lose tonight. I don't really have a prediction for this game. So like, this is actually a pass for me. I have a slight ish lean to the under just because the number is so high and the guys have been good. But again, Blake, when you talk about regression candidates, that scares me away from that number too. So anyway, this is a non-play for me from a line standpoint, because again, we look for value on the show and we talk about it all the time. And I do not see the value here on the Toronto Blue Jays and the Boston Red Sox tonight from a like traditional line standpoint. Do either of you have a play from this game? Because yeah, Ailish and I have been riding the Alejandro Kirk over pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's been pretty good to
us. That would be mine from today. It's not gonna be my wake and rake. It was my wake and rake yesterday. Mm-hmm. Kirk over 1.5 bases. It's plus money. So
yeah.
I mean, there's lots of value on it still. I think he's been the most consistent player on this team and the best player in baseball ever to exist. So why would you not bet on him?
Yeah. Are we ready to move off this game then?
It's true.
Or is there something?
I was just gonna say, just with the Kirk thing, like the one flag would be he's played 4 days in a row.
That's it. I don't think
he's a catcher. Yeah, no, and Moreno has been catching Stripling.
Yeah, I don't think he plays tonight. And that's why I liked buying the under originally at 9.5. But when Blake says regression candidate, one of the worst in all of baseball, it spooks me off my one thing that I kind of liked. Because I was like, what is Kirk worth in terms of the drop-off between like Kirk and Tapia, right? Like in terms of who's the DH step in? It's astronomical. Plus now you've got the Espinal regression. It's just, there's like the lineup doesn't feel as long, when Kirk isn't in it. That's for sure. Anyways, let's move on. All right, Ailish, you said that's not your best bet. What is?
It is not. I'm going to the Yankees A's game tonight. The Yankees are really fun to watch. But they have a guy on the mound, Sears. You know anything about Sears? Never heard of the guy. He is a rookie pitcher. I think he's played, two games this year? Yes, two games. I think that this game is going to be a lot closer. And I, last night with the Yankees, had this incredible comeback. They have, 10 walk-off wins this year. They'll probably find a way to win. But their money line is minus 195, so it's not even bettable. But what I did do some research on is the Yankees are playing Montas, and he's great, so that's hard to bet individually. But Josh Donaldson has crushed him. He's 4-for-7, hitting .571 with 3 home runs and guys against him. So I'm looking for an individual player to play well tonight, and Josh Donaldson is that for me. And I'm going to bet him over 1.5 bases for +148. So a lot of value on that. And history shows that he's been really great against this guy. So instead of betting a team or an under and over, I was looking for something more individual, and that will be my bet.
I like it. It's a well-researched bet. It's a very, very good bet. Josh Donaldson, I've told you, has entered my villain Hall of Fame. So you asking me to bet on a guy that is like now a villain.
Hey, but it's a win-win for you. If he loses, then you're like, haha, loser. And if he wins, then you make money. So.
Yeah. You know what JD likes more than sticking it to players he doesn't like? Money.
Yeah,
exactly.
I really do like winning the money. Like, I won't lie. It feels good. It feels really good. I'm going to drop down tonight and go with a pretty a bet that I'm not used to. I don't like the value on the – I like the first five innings with two games tonight, but they're both late. I like the Skubal has been a little bit less spectacular lately, but I really do like the guy. And Rodon, Blake and I are trying to put back in the trust tree. I'm going to do that. I like Manea and Gallen under in the first three innings, but it's only 2.5.
That's once through the order, though, for two of the best pitchers in baseball.
I know. Right, and that's now. And so, fine. Like, that's, but those were basically the two bets I have up, and I'm actually going to pick the under 2.5 through the first three just because I don't have the other one up in front of me and don't know what the value swing is, and we're only 3 minutes left, and we need to get to Blake's bet as well. So, yeah, tonight I'll just take the under three runs in the first three innings between Sean Manea and Zach Gallen. And this is actually a lot more of a Zach Gallen play. I really think that he's the most underrated player in baseball right now. I don't think anybody knows who he is unless you gamble on sports, because why would you? And yeah, he's just awesome.
He's been great. And I had that, that was, you know how I do the thing where I try to guess what your bet's going to be. And that was what I was.
Yeah, but I thought you and I agreed that we were back in on Rodon after like a shaky start. And then I didn't come with you on that one play. And now I thought we were like Team Rodon. So yeah, it's just.
Yeah, but you can't do it every time out. You got to pick. You got to be selective a little bit. All right. I'm going similar to Ailish, pick a player props. Paul Goldschmidt over 1.5 total bases. Not only is he just a monster this year, he's hitting .451 off of lefties still. It's just a lot. He's up against Hudson tonight, and it's just like this whole Cards team destroys lefties, but the market has caught up to that. And yeah, Goldschmidt is just a monster against lefties. Also just a monster in general. Like, he has a WRC plus of almost 200 on the season. He's been double an average pitcher. So yeah, not afraid of Braxton Garrett on the other side. Paul Goldschmidt over 1.5 total bases.
Braxton Garrett is just the name of a guy who gives up five runs in three innings. Like, that's, you know, like, that's just the name of a guy who gets smashed. I'm sorry, but like, I'm sorry, Braxton Garrett. That's the name of a guy who was amazing in high school, and then now is like, go
Paul Goldschmidt's so confident seeing Braxton Garrett on the other side. He hasn't even done his prep. He's just like, whoever this guy is, I know how to hit him.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. Okay, so today's rundown, Ailish Forfar, over 9.5 loony dogs down at the ballpark where she will probably end up. No, she loves.
I won't be going.
She likes Josh Donaldson. She thinks that the track record is pretty tested and true here. She wants to root for the villain. She likes the bad guy. So yeah, Josh Donaldson, will taking his over. I like under with Sean Manea and Zach Gallen, two really good pitchers. Manea I don't trust as much, but either way, it's three runs in three innings. Let's go get this thing done. And Blake Murphy back in Paul Goldschmidt, which is not really a bad thing to do because the guy is, pretty damn elite.
Plus 890 on our parlay on Unibet.
All right. Plus 890. I love a parlay like that. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. For JD, Blake, and Ailish, Sports at 590 The Fan.